Mr. Waller, real two. The huts that were in the camp, were they brick or brick built?
I think they were brick, so much of brick, and then it was wood after that. Wood sides, wood roofs. I'm trying to remember, 24, would it be 24 in a hut? 18 at least. And they were a good set of lads. Unfortunately, when we went to the battalion, there were so many, I don't know why, weren't fit enough, went to different units. I could never understand that. But the accommodation was we had a big tin, I think it was, under the bed to put stuff in, and we had a locker. The bed had biscuits on it, and three biscuits, and the bottom half pushed inside the other one, so you had more room. You had to keep it clean. It had to be swept out. Well, two people were more as detailed every day to keep it clean, to sweep it out and to clean the fire out. And
was it the old belly stove that
the
you had?
The old belly stove, yes, it was the old
that
belly.
That must have been quite a job, if you'd had it lit, to clean that out, you know, and be ready for any inspections that came along.
Well, I don't think we got inspected every day. More or less, you'd get inspected on the weekend, on a Saturday morning. Then for the first... We were supposed to be in camp for 6 weeks. Well, we only did 6 weeks training. We were supposed to be in camp for so long before you got, like, weekend leave sort of thing. But I know we had we didn't know it. It was like a spot prize, really. We did the drill, and the sergeant came along and said, well, the drill's been very good. The three of you got, like, a weekend pass, or 36 hour, was Wilkinson, Hutchison, and myself. And I thought, well, that's great, that, like, you know, because I really enjoyed the drill.
Well, we'll come again to that later. You say that biscuits, now they were the three
biscuits.
Square mattress
types, yes. And you put one on top of the other, and the second half, or the bottom half of the bed, pushed inside the other, so you had more room when you were in the barrack room, you see. You weren't, because there wasn't a lot of room when you pulled them out to walk in between them.
And you did say early on that they were not particularly comfortable.
Well, they weren't the first night, till you get used. I think I cried the first night, because you seemed to be, every time you moved, they split and you were sinking in between them. Didn't like it at all. I was cold.
What did they give you in the way of covering on the bed?
I think we had a sheet and two blankets. And not used to a bed like that at all. Your bed was made at home and tucked in, and this was a very big shock.
And they didn't show you how to tuck your blankets in and so forth, so they didn't fall off.
They showed you how to do it for the next morning. They didn't show you how to get into bed at all. No.
Pillow? Did you get a pillow?
Yes, we had a pillow. Everything was very simple. I don't think there was anything we had in there. The main thing you had to hand was your mess tins and your knife, fork and spoon in your cup. That was the most important.
Yes, I was going to ask you what they issued you with. When you got did you get your uniform straight away?
Yes, sports coat and flannels. They were not the same. They were two different shades of khaki. They were really terrible. The only good thing about it is that Duramel eye up on the flash on the...
And what do you mean by sports coat and flannels?
Two different shades, a shade of khaki. If you've got a light pair of trousers, you've got a darker tunic. 9 hours out of 10, you've got a lighter tunic and a dark. So everybody called them sports coat and flannels.
Typical battle dress, the first,
yes,
second World War battle
BD,
dress.
Yes, it was BD. There was no, I don't know where that was number one dress. We had fatigues for drill and...
The denims?
The denim, yes, the top and bottom, yes, you had like a bottom half and a top half for the denims.
How did they issue the uniform and equipment to you?
Oh, you went to the quartermaster stores and you wanted to be like an octopus with all the things. There was about four of them there, and he said, the usual, draw cellular green, one or two, vests with the holes in, two, trousers, tunic, burry, badge, socks, pullover, and everything was all to hand. They had big cabinets there, they just pulled the one out. It didn't matter whether it was your size or not, you just have to go around and find somebody who would fit in. You know, if he was too big for you, he'd find somebody bigger than you, and so that he was a bit smaller. But eventually we got sorted out when we got to the barracks. And then you had to get the stamp, and all your kit had to be stamped. I'm still using my polish and brushes today.
And that would be army number, was it, the stamp?
Yeah, the last four of the army number, yes, 8584.
Equipment, was that given straight away?
Yes,
webbing?
Yes, yes, you got the webbing and the tin of blanco, and that was instructed how to use it. And I think the brasso you had to buy, the dusters you had to buy, and the naffy. So your first week's money didn't go very far at all. But
what colour blanco was it you were given?
I think it would be like a grey-green, really. We weren't into this yellow stuff like the car people were. So it was an awful job.
And that you carried across to the billet, of course, to the accommodation.
Yes, we took that to the billet, yes, and put it on the bed, and he gave you so much time. Not a lot of time, because we went in on the Thursday afternoon. The Friday I might have been trying to get kitted out in the first drill session that we had on the square to try to get everybody to do, put the right foot down at the same time as everybody else. I do remember on the Saturday morning we had to go for the injections for TAV, Schrick and something else, and it stiffened your arms up. And the Saturday afternoon you were doing your kit, you were cleaning your rifle, and as soon as they were greased up, we were having to clean them off. Your boots, somebody was trying to show you how to put with a little button of circles or a spoon and heat it over a candle to try and rub. The boots were new, I don't think they'd been worn before, but you had to get the little bubbles off them. And you had to sit there with a little bit of water and a little bit of polish, and that was a Saturday evening. There was no radio, well, we didn't have television then.
And how many pairs of boots had you been issued?
Two.
These were the heavily studded ammunition boots, I think.
Yes, yes, 70, I think it was 17 studs, and they all had to be in the right order for when you did the inspection. If you were caught, well, it did always the same. You know, if you should, your boot lace, it didn't have to be twisted, and your studs had to be the right amount of studs in your boots. And he could ask any time, put your boot up, you know, the stud missing, take his name. And then he would get a day or 2 days fatigues, depending on how severe the crime was. It seemed pretty ridiculous at the time. We just went along with the deal, but we didn't know any different, really.
Where were the ablutions in?
Straight opposite to where our block was. And the funny thing about the ablution block, even today, I can get away without shaving for a day or two because I don't have much. And I'd been there a week, and the sergeant was on the drill in the morning. He said to me, "Have you shaved?" I said, "I don't shave. I haven't got enough on to shave." He said, "You shave every day in the British Army." And he called Wilson, Jones, "Take that man and show him how to shave." And I said, "Well, I don't have any shaving." "Oh, we've got all that come with us." So they took me to the ablution block, and it's all cold water. And Bud said, "Now this is taking the mickey out, 18-year-old. This is a shaving brush. This is a shaving stick. And you put that under the water, and you go like that. And then you brush it on, and this is a razor, and you go like that." And I had to go out, and well, I went, I think I don't know whether I rang home or rode home, and I got a razor sent and a shaving stick, urgent, otherwise I'd have been in the nick.
The toilets, where were they?
They were right opposite as well, behind the ablution block. They were all more or less attached, but the ablution block was duckboards. Just a slab stone and a cold tap. There was no hot water, no cold water. I don't remember any hot water until I went to Berlin.
You mentioned that there was somewhere between 18 and 24 of you
in the barracks, yes.
And what was the name of your particular section? Or
it was Hoge platoon I was in.
You said that there were quite a good bunch. There were
a good bunch, yes. I'll say a good bunch. The chap I piled up with, I thought he was a great lad, but he was a. If you asked me today if we be friends with him, I could say yes. But he wanted to get on in life, and if you got in his way, he would have stood on you. He didn't want to be a corporal or anything like that, but he didn't want to be... I remember we went out once to Durham, and when we came back, all we had for beds was two tables. And he tried the switches, there was nothing there at all. No light, so he flicked the lighter or the match, whatever he had. And we had a table with a rifle and your steel helmet. And that was it. No box, no nothing. So we just laid on the table for the night and went to sleep. And when we got up the next morning, the boots were tied around the chimney put on the roof. But he was up on the roof and got them off in no time. But that was the only incident. I mean,
was this playing?
He antagonised people sometimes.
So you suffered.
But I can suffer people like that. I can put up with people like that. I always seem to meet all the oddballs and get on with them.
But you, in effect, suffered that particular episode because it was
incident,
with him.
That was all, yes, just the one incident. But I still keep in touch with a lot of these people.
What was this chap's name?
Roy Mowie. He went on to be very well up in this area in the Pearl of Sheldon's company.
Is this the chap you told me about that became the Colonel's bugler?
No, that's another one. Harry Sampson was the other one.
I will come to that one. Yeah. So the bullying and initiation ceremonies that you hear about today, were they...
I don't remember anything at all.
And the background of these people that you were with, where did they come from?
Well, a lot of them came from the local... Well, they were all from Durham. Roy Moore had been a trained fitter. Well, he was serving his time. He worked for Crossley, the brick people at Eaglescliff. Eddie Stacey was a plumber. Ronnie Smith was an electrician. I don't know what Harry Sampson did. Johnny Kenny from Sunderland, he was like toe icing at straw. There's the Rover people in Sunderland. Wilkison, I think he belonged Ferry Hill, but he'd already done his national service in the medical corps, I believe. Bob Hayton, he was an electrician from Windermere. And there was two lads at the top. One went to the Pioneer Corps and one went to the Tank Corps. I wouldn't like to try and guess the names. I can't place them and I can't remember them. I remember them, meaning the hut, but I can't remember the names at all. But the lads that I do remember went to the Durham's with us.
Was there any resentment at being pulled out of civilian employment into the army?
None at all. I was glad to get away from my father.
You were, but were the people in the hut?
Oh, yes. Eddie Stacey and Ronnie Smith whinged from going in to coming out and detested every minute of it. And they let everybody else know they didn't like it at all. Thought, well, mind, Eddie Stacey was married. I mean, he had a family then, I would think. Excuse me.
Who was your NCO instructor?
Sergeant Clapperman was the
chap you mentioned.
Was the drill instructor, yes.
And he would have corporals, I presume.
He had two corporals, a Corporal Braithwaite, and I can never remember the other corporal at all. But he was off duty, he was champion. But on duty, he was a terrible fella. He swore at you and he shouted at you. The shouting didn't bother you because my father had done that, so I was immune to that.
But the swearing, how did you take that?
Well, it was the same. I mean, it wasn't this F and C in business that we have today, you know, but a lot of bloody and bugger, useless bugger, and you can't bloody well do this at all, you know, you're useless. But the sergeant would use the same language, so it didn't bother me. I'd already grown up with that, so it didn't matter at all. I just had to remember that I put my left foot down, not my right foot. Well, you waved your arms at the right thing as well. It was right arm, left foot, not the other way around.
And being in very much into a man's world now, there's nothing but men around, you settled into that okay?
I loved it. I thought it was great. It was that good anyhow, in a sense that when you got paid the first time, and he gave us 14 shillings, and we'd already made an allowance for seven shillings to go home. And I didn't drink and I didn't smoke when I went in until I'd been in the army a good bit. That I could still spend the 7 shillings that I had, and it wasn't enough. So I signed on for another year. I couldn't manage on 14 shillings, but I could on 28. And I really enjoyed my time there. My wife says many a time when we talk to people, if we hadn't been obligated with the small hole, we'd have stayed in.
And as part of the barrack room activities, were there little gambling schools that were, came into being?
Oh, yes, we always had those. I mean, we had, there was two or three, there would always be a drift. If they weren't up the pub somewhere, they always got out, they didn't go through the proper outlet, the guard room, they went over the wire or under the wire. But they had all sorts of, you know, you never saw them. I mean, I can't remember really. They didn't bother me. I was in my world with my friend Roy Moore, and the other people were just there throughout the day. I mean, we used to go to Durham, to the rink, and to the cinema in Durham, and when you got time to go out there.
How long was it before you were allowed out of the camp?
Well, as I said, they're supposed to be, you know, we're supposed to do 3 weeks at least. I think it was the third week when I got this prize for a 36-hour pass, and I went home. But then it was Christmas time in the 3 weeks, and we were allowed home for Christmas. We had to go home back. I came home on the Christmas Eve, and I had Christmas Day, Boxing Day, and I went back on the day after Boxing Day, I think. And as regards New Year's Day, I don't think we were allowed out at all. Some of them went over the wall and under the wire.
So you didn't have an army Christmas?
Like I did later on. No, not at all. But I remember going home for the Christmas period and going to the local dance and flaunting my uniform then. Sports coat and flannels.
Can we come in and talk? You have mentioned this, or touched upon it, the inspections that you had weekly. These would be kit inspections, were they?
The kit
inspections.
Kit
and billet
inspections. Kit and billet inspections.
Can you describe to me the layout for a kit inspection?
Oh. We used to have it on the board. You used to have to keep running backwards and forwards. You had to have your steel helmet at the top, your blanket had to be done, your two sheets and your blanket round them, like a sandwich. And then your steel helmet would go on the top. Your great coat might have to lie on one side of the bed and your rifle on the other side of the bed. And then you would have a shirt, socks, vest, boots, probably turned over to see that all the studs were in. And that's about all I can remember. I do remember one chap, his boots were very highly polished, and he'd gone home, and he'd been doing them at home, and his sister said, "Do you want me to keep them like that for you?" I said, "What will you do?" She said, "I'll put you some clear varnish on." And those boots sparkled, that when they came for inspection, he always said he's got the best boots in this foot. You know, everybody should come up to that standard. And we'd been out on an exercise somewhere, and they came back with your feet ringing wet. And the next little job was drill, and he had to put these boots on. And when he came back after stamping his feet on the parade ground, he had cracked them all to pieces. So he had to start again with the candle and the spoon and burn it all up.
Who carried out the inspection?
If I remember right, it would be the CEO, Colonel Fleming, I think. I think it was Colonel Fleming. I'm nearly sure it was Colonel Fleming. He would be the come and do the inspection. Saturday mornings when he came to do them. And then there was nothing from 12 o'clock, you know, your day was over. So if you had a sports afternoon or anything like that, or you could go out and the count book out as long as you passed muster at the big mirrors you were going out.
So you'd stand to attention beside the bed, presumably, when the inspection
was
carried out?
Yes.
If anything wasn't up to scratch on the bed, what was the usual response to that?
Well, you'd probably get some fatigues. I don't think you went inside for it. You just get fatigues, you'd send it out to the cookhouse or go and peel some potatoes or go to the sergeant's mess and scrub a floor or two. It also taught me not to volunteer for anything. The sergeant came round one day and said, plays musical instruments. Well, I'd had a few piano lessons, and this friend of mine, Roy Moore, he'd had a few, and we both put our hands up, Sergeant's Mess. So we went to the Sergeant's Mess, and we had all this moving. There was tables to move, chairs to move, floors to scrub. So I didn't volunteer anymore after that, for nothing.
If any of your items were missing, was there any stealing going on?
I don't remember anything. Not in Bransworth. Not in Bransworth. I never lost anything in Bransworth that I can remember. And I don't remember anybody else. They all seemed to be a real good set of lads. I mean, we had the two platoons. There was competition between the two platoons when he came to the range. Or what was it, a rope march, or whatever you had to do in the gym, if you had to get up a rope, or you had to go on the parallel bars and pull yourself up on the doors. There was competition there, but it was all healthy stuff. There was no... I don't remember any bad people. I remember a few people who probably later on turned out to be bad, but when they were in there, we were all in together. And to this day, I'm friends with a lot of them still, and... there's no animosity at all, you know. They really have a really good crack. We have a drink together. And I really enjoyed my time. I really enjoyed meeting the people.
What time was Reveille?
I would think somewhere around about 6 o'clock, 6:30. And you had to be up, washed, shaved, and breakfast would be about 7:15.
We marched to the canteen.
Yes, we marched to the canteen.
Well, the dining room.
The bottom end of the barricade was where one of the corporals slept in there. And he would be up and about and outside for breakfast. So you'd have your tin, your plate, and your knife and your fork, and he would march down to the canteen. I don't remember what we had for breakfast at all. I know when you came out, they had a big tin where you had to wash your own knife and fork and your plate and your cup. And then you took you back to your barrack, where you stayed. And I think we were given 15 minutes to tidy everything up. And I think we had a room leader, or somebody who had been appointed to go around and just check up on everything and make sure it was right. You say that you hadn't left anything showing that wasn't supposed to show. Keep the place tidy and clean. And then 8 o'clock was a drill. So, you know, sometimes when I think back, sometimes you used to do maybe 7 o'clock. You might run to Willington. You would run so far, walk so far, run so far, then do an about turn and come back again before breakfast.
And this was PT.
PT with just the vest and shorts. And if it was a bad day, you would go in the garage place. We used to have some garages there with no trucks in them, and you would do your drilling there if it was bad weather, or you'd do your PT in there. But he had a proper PT. I came to take you for that. But I used to enjoy the run, especially when it was dry weather, you know, not so much. We went to the range once and it was snowy. You had to lie down in the snow and fire at the range, but it didn't make any difference. You still had to do it to get your marks for your pay, as they told us.
So the very first drills that they taught you, what were they? The very first thing you learned?
The very first thing was that your right hand, your left hand, your right foot, your left foot. That when your right foot, your left foot, you set up on your left, the right hand went up. And we still had a few left foot, left arm, hadn't done very much. And that was very difficult to a lot of people. That he had the corporal, he would demonstrate, and I think the first thing was you got the foot up and you stamped it down. You really made a sound when you put that foot down. And then he would have you left turn, about turn, march so many paces, about turn, after he demonstrated everything. And it took a little bit before everybody got it right. But after the end of 6 weeks, we were brilliant.
And was this done to numbers?
I think when we first started, yes, it would be. It would be done to numbers. Yes. I don't know if it was done so much with the foot drill, because sometimes you didn't have your rifle; you just did foot drill. But if we did rifle drill, The rifle drill would be done to numbers. It would be up, one, two, three. Yeah, rifle drill was more with the numbers. But to go back... Oh, sorry about that.
Right.
Yes, the rifle drill would be done with numbers.
The marching drills, from the very beginning, did you go into light infantry pace or did you build up to it?
No, we went straight into it.
You must have found that hard.
It was hard, yes. He always said that this was light infantry and you would do the light infantry pace. The only time where we didn't do light infantry pace was if you came to a hill and he would say, just slow down, we'll shorten the pace. But the pace had to be 36, I'm nearly sure it was a 36 inch was the pace. And you went at the regimental pace all the time on the square. If you went out for a road march, we used to do a lot down to Page Bank and along the track to Byers Green and back over the bridge. As you come into Willington, there's a little 1-in-9 bridge. And he used to let you slow down and shorten the pace going up there. He never went up that at 140 to the minute. But other places you did. If you were off the tarmac road, you'd maybe just amble along a little bit, you see, and have a bit chatter to yourselves. You wouldn't keep regimental all the time.
So you probably have some PT of some kind or the after or before breakfast, I think you said.
Sometimes before then breakfast, yes.
Then you were into your drills.
Then we did the drills, yes.
And would they last all morning?
I don't know about all morning. I think probably till 10 o'clock, and then you had a break because you went to the naffy for a cup of tea, and then after that you would maybe have weapon training for the range.
And you'd been issued with the rifle. Was this still the 303 rifle?
The Mark IV 303, yes.
And again, you went through the drills. Now, light infantry drills are a bit different from heavy infantry drills.
Oh, it
weapons.
Is.
How was that?
You don't put your rifle to the shoulder. You either have it at the trail, which is you carry it at the full arm's length with the rifle, you horizontal to the, or vertical, horizontal to the ground, or you carried it in, I don't know how you say, it was tucked into your, the sight, the gun sight at the end of the barrel was tucked into your shoulder with your finger through the trigger guard, and you carried it that way. And when you came to do to stop, everything was an automatic standard ease, that you stood easy, he gave you the order to stand, or whatever it was the word, and you came to the standard ease position, and then he gave you an order, if it was a right turn, you would pull the rifle back, come to attention at the same time, turn right, and shove the rifle out and stand at ease at the same time. Everything was like automatic. And when you did the march, to march off, it was the same. It was, you came up, the foot was into the attention position, and the rifle tucked into you, and then either you, when you set off to march, you stepped forward with your left foot, and the rifle was pulled up, and you held it in the middle, and you just marched along like that with the rifle on the side at the full extent of the arm. You swung your left arm but not your right arm.